Turn up the radio and sing along. It's time for another great song. This is the Great Song Podcast.
Season's greetings and welcome once again to the Great Song Podcast.
Rob went in that upper octave.
I was like, I'm really just hammering a note
head
away. I'm going to stick with it. I'm Rob Alley.
I am JP Motor.
And we're here to celebrate the greatest songs in modern music history. We're going to tell you what makes them great, why we think they're awesome, and why you should too. JP, how you doing today, man?
I am doing fantastic. So today we're covering JP, that's me, most listened to group of 2022. Spotify at the end of the year tells you who you've listen to the most, and it's this group. And a classic film from the 80s as Movie Month continues.
Yes.
So this group is The Midnight, and Rob, tell them the name of the song and the movie that we are covering.
So we're kind of cheating just this once. Because this song is not from the soundtrack, but if this movie is ever remade or re-released,
oh man, it's the credit song.
This is absolutely the credit song, opening credits and closing.
It's sandwiched.
Yeah, this is Days of Thunder by The Midnight. Indeed. That is Days of Thunder by The Midnight from the album Days of Thunder, and not the movie Days of Thunder, but we're going to fudge that in.
That's right.
We're finding a way to talk about it. And we're going to be talking to Tyler Lyle. He's the voice that you're hearing and one of the principal members and songwriters of The Midnight. That is from the 2014 EP Days of Thunder and the 2017 remix album The Midnight Remixed. And JP's going to talk a lot because Midnight, one of his favorite bands. So we're really going to let him dig in here. Don't really have chart information on this because it was it wasn't a big charting single for them, but it was the song that sort of took them into the spotlight.
Yeah.
As I understand it, it kind of took off on Reddit.
Yeah.
Which is such a funny way for a band to happen.
Fine.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But they, Tyler and Tim McEwen, who comprised The Midnight. I have a few listening notes as we go through. We're in C minor. First of all, obviously the immediate vibe you get is welcome to the 80s, right?
Yes.
Like it's welcome back to the 80s. Mm-hmm. And it's part of a genre called synthwave that's sort of been, you know, given this name that is particular to sort of reproducing 80s feel and has even a particular look to like album
neon
covers. Yeah. Neon, lots of like neon grids.
Fluorescent pink.
And
everywhere.
Like DeLoreans and, you know, certain types of cars and stuff like that. If you like that, like future nostalgia, you know, feel, synthwave feel, you're going to love The Midnight because this is very sort of indicative of their vibes.
Yep.
They have a lot of, you know, just really fun stuff that's like, It just chills you out to listen to it.
It's not like perfect driving music.
Like, oh, it's amazing. Yeah, I mean,
just because it's got cars on there and it's called Days of Thunder, but like it's their whole everything is great to drive.
It makes you want to be driving in a car that is not very tall.
A short car, Yeah. I'm so glad you said that. It's a low car.
Yeah.
That's bright.
Yeah.
And it's got to be at night. With Don't give me that daytime stuff. Street lights hitting on the right on the down. It's a on the four on the floor. Each four is a street light hit if you're keeping up with
it. Yes. So we're in C minor here with that classic like minor one to flat six thing. Or if you think of the minor chord as the six minor, six to four, you know, the kind of thing. It perfectly retro. Even the synthesizer line that is like dangerously close to the guitar line from Boys of Summer by Don Henley. You know, I mean, come on. It's got synth drums that are like crunched and a little bit distorted. Yeah. Like everything's is a little bit. It's got like you know, this like analog over saturation to
it. It's not a drum kit. There's not a chance that's a drum kit.
No, no, no. Uh-uh. This came from a keyboard or a pad or, you know, something else. Yeah. Now, the snare, I wanted to listen because I can't tell in listening to it if it is a straight up synth snare or if it is a sample of a real drum. Yeah. Okay. It's like we're saying, I don't think it's a live drummer studio, but it's, I can't tell if this is a synthesized generated snare drum sound or a sample of a real drum.
Now, when they play live, they play with a live full band with a live drummer. Right. And how much fun is it to play drums to this stuff?
Oh,
like
gosh.
This guy's having the time of his life.
Yeah. Dream gig. Yeah,
it's
right.
Awesome.
Listen to the snare. Tell me what you think. I think I'm going sample.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of snare drum sample that ends up like that's also a punch sound in Street Fighter.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Finish him.
Yeah.
It's like, awesome.
It's like
that's
you
good.
Know.
I like that.
That's video game sample there. And then you get out of nowhere, like after the move your hips line in the first verse, you get the saxophone out of nowhere and becomes one of the signatures of the Midnight, the saxophone thing. But that really wasn't necessarily the intention. But there's this guy, Thomas Eatinger, who happened to hook up with Tim McEwen while Tim was in Denmark for a little bit. And he calls him up. He's like, hey, could you lay down some saxophone on this thing? And then that sound becomes, you know, one of the hallmarks of the band and the next however many albums.
So the way I discovered them, I went to see this other band called Nightly, and then they were actually the headliner. Nightly was the opener, but I liked the opener. And every time Thomas comes up and plays a solo, the crowd goes nuts.
Really?
He walks to the front of the stage, swag. He's like, if Chuck Norris played saxophone, it's not Kenny G standing in the back trying to look cool. It's like this guy wants to kick you in the face with his saxophone.
Okay.
Like,
So I have a certain imagination. I don't know what he looks like. Yeah. Okay. So I have a thing kind of in my brain. Describe him to me and I'll tell you if I was right.
I have to be careful because I don't know exactly what nationality he is.
Okay.
I would imagine he's some form of Asian if I was guessing.
Okay.
And forgive me if I'm botching this or looking, I'm from a distance up in the top of, and I don't have the best vision.
Okay.
But he, dark hair, longer dark hair.
Okay.
And I'm trying to remember, like, shirt was maybe unbuttoned a little bit.
Okay.
Like, unbuttoned shirt, not super tall.
Okay. Full-length pants or shorts?
Length pants.
Full-length pants.
He had full-length pants on.
Okay. Then I was mad wrong.
Okay.
So what kind of you're almost describing to me makes me feel like I'm almost imagining Arnel Pineda, right?
Yeah. That's, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's, if he was a little thicker. That's great.
Okay.
That's good.
So I was imagining, it made me imagine a white, like European or Eastern European guy with a lot of chest hair and very short shorts and thick, like just a thick guy with like a, maybe even like a, what do you call it? What's like the onesie?
Oh my gosh. That is more what that guy actually looks like. So the guy that played the sax with them wasn't this guy.
Okay, so Thomas Eatinger's on the album.
Yes, I'm glad I cleared that up because I was like, that guy that played did not look like a Thomas or an Eatinger. So that guy rocked live, whoever that guy was. But Thomas Eatinger is Danish.
Okay.
He's best known for playing the sax. Look at that.
Okay.
How about that?
All right, there we go.
He looks kind of like, he looks kind of like the guitar player from Petra, Bob Hartman, if him and Vince, if him and Vince Gill had a kid.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. He really does.
Kind of looks like Vince Gill.
Okay, I'm gonna have you look up a guy, and if you're driving, pull over and look up this person, or save it till you get to home or to the office or whatever. Look up. There's a wrestler in WWE named Rick Boogs, B-O-O-G-S. Everybody, look him up.
Don't typo that one.
That is who I was picturing. Okay.
Okay.
Playing the saxophone, like just so big, like you know, and so boldly playing these saxophone lines. That's who I was kind of imagining. Okay.
So but there's nobody that looks more opposite to Thomas Edinger than the guy that I saw play that I just described.
Right.
Like nothing like that guy.
That's great. Let's see. This song has a dope video.
Yes.
The video, as I understand it, is comprised of real vintage clips of commercials and like car ads and 80s visuals from back in the day in all their grainy original glory. Uh-huh. Like it's not like they went in and added, you know, it's not like we shot new footage and added grain to it. It's like, nah, this is straight from a Betamax or, you know, a VHS when somebody recorded a, you know, a Toyota Supra commercial from the 80s or whatever.
A Chevy Lumina commercial.
Yeah.
There's a teaser for what's to come in the Days of Thunder conversation.
Okay. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the Midnight? Sure. Maybe we should meet the band and talk Midnight?
Play a quick jingle of Meet the Band because it'll take 4 seconds.
Okay.
And then we'll go in and talk about them.
Hey, let's meet the band. It's time to meet the band. Hey, mama, let's meet the band. Let's all meet the band.
Hey! So the Midnight is Tyler Lyle, who we're hanging out with, Tim McEwen, and Thomas Edinger on saxophone, some of it. There you go.
All right.
So that was good. We just met the band.
Good job.
But let's jump into a little bit on the first EP, Days of Thunder.
Okay.
And you mentioned the last thing you talked about was videos. So look up a song called Gloria. This song has an awesome video with all scenes from Back to the Future. So are you looking on YouTube or are you looking on?
No, I'm just on Apple Music here.
Jump ahead to like minute 118-ish or so, I would think.
Yeah. There you go. It's 110.
All right, so that's track two on the first EP, which is Days of Thunder. The first song on there is called The Year's Prologue. Then Gloria, track three is We Move Forward. Track four is Days of Thunder, which we talked about. Track five, Kick Drums and Red Wine, has the only other guest other than those three.
Oh.
It's our only guest. It's a synth solo by a guy named Oliver McEwen. Yep, same last name as Tim, so I'm guessing they're related. Track six, play a little of this. This is Los Angeles. It's going to be their biggest hit. It's at the top on Spotify.
Okay.
Here's your radio single if there was ever one. So this is great.
In the headphones, you can really hear the vinyl crackle.
Crackling, yeah.
Big fat snare.
Silhouette.
kind of a long song. This hasn't even hit the chorus yet. Here's your chorus.
Oh, wow.
Okay, yeah. One thing that I'll point out here, it's kind of a good place to talk about it. Like, there's dynamics in music, and then there's this, which is not dynamics.
You're right.
And it is different parts. Like, I even had to tell Rob, I was like, we hadn't even hit the chorus yet.
Yeah.
And, like, the chorus doesn't elevate.
Right.
Like, it just changes a different melody, maybe a slight, but there's no dynamic shift, if that makes any kind of sense. Maybe some parts drop out here and there for verse isolation and stuff, but a lot of their music's like that.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's just, it's music that you can, I mean, it's driving music.
You can put it on forever.
Yeah. It's not going to bother you.
No.
It's only going to make you feel good.
Absolutely. Like, this song could be 6 minutes or 22 minutes, and I'm good.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the same.
Yeah.
Others I like, I'll just hit on a couple others that I like real quick, and then we can move on from there. My favorite song is probably called The Comeback Kid. We don't have to play it, but that's probably my favorite.
Okay.
Song called Sunset. I do want to play a little bit of it. It's from the album Endless Summer.
Mm-hmm.
The girl at the beginning sounds to me like that Britney Spears video where she talks. Like, listen to this and see if this reminds you of that. Just listen.
Okay.
What is that? What is that? You know what I'm talking about?
It's Britney, like that.
There must be something else out there.
Where she's like, she's like, I went into the ocean and I got it for it. Like the guy goes into the ocean and gets the thing from the Titanic movie for, I can't remember which video. Y'all Britney Spears fans out there know what I'm talking about.
I was going to say, I guess I don't know.
It's from, but that sounds like Britney Spears talking right there to me. Anyway, vocals come in at 110. This song's good.
I love it. You know what I love that's not cool anymore? A good freaking long intro.
Oh, dude, this is the long one.
Ah! Oh, so good. You're going to set some people free with this episode.
That's right.
Faked our deaths, lit a match, closed the door. Greyhound station, paid in cash. It's Lazarus coming back.
Something else he does too, his rhyme scheme fits perfect. Like, it lands good.
We've been in this town for far too long. They say it's darkest before the dawn. We're moving on, we're moving on, we're moving on. Sunset, no regrets.
Yeah. You just know when you hear a drum fill before a chorus that goes boom, 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 that tells your soul that your life is about to get better.
Yeah, it's right? good. It's like something good's coming.
That drum fill is full of hope. Whenever you hear that, like, flams going around the toms.
So
boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, like, that's good. That's
life
good.
Is getting better.
Because he's on a mission on that drum fill.
Yeah.
Like, he's going somewhere. It's progressing. Yes,
yeah, that's sure.
good. Another good song is called Comet, Lost Boy, Memories. If you're listening to Memories, go to minute 145. I'll just save you some time. We don't have to play it.
Okay, okay.
Listen to those. They have four albums. Okay, Endless Summer, Kids, Monsters, and Heroes. Yep. The newest is Heroes, which came out in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they said these songs were influenced by Mutt Lange. They're like, we want to make Def Leppard years Mutt Lange album.
That's awesome.
So when you think about, I just tried to find what I thought were the two best examples from the Heroes album so that they could see if they accomplished what they were set out for.
Okay.
So think Def Leppard, think Mutt Lange, go to a song called Heartbeat and listen to the gang vocals at second 45.
Okay.
So play Heartbeat, and here's just go ahead to second 45 so you can hear the gang vocals.
Yes.
So that's their arena rock version right there. So go to Heroes.
Okay.
First 3 seconds, he's like Sting. And then at like second 57, it's the big chorus.
Oh. Yeah.
You know, that's a tribute.
Of course. And where's the chorus?
Second 57.
Yeah.
We'll change. Like there's a chance we'll take it. Ready to love you like I can. Like my heart's not breaking. Wherever you are, wherever you are, red, white, and blue. I'll keep waiting. But the missing hero is you.
Love the way it gets back to that chord. Yeah. Oh, man, that's so good. That's so good.
I think mission accomplished. Like, that's the, you know, what they were setting out for.
Yeah.
Layered vocals.
And then the Monsters album, I really like the Monsters album because it's like, it's all just a little spooky.
Yeah.
Like, the whole thing is, you know, it's got some, it's, I don't know, it's just really interesting. I like it.
Dynamite intro.
Wow. That's really in depth.
That's okay. You can say that. Let's talk a little bit about the movie. You want to talk a little about the movie? Did you do anything on that?
Let's talk about Days of Thunder, the 19. Oh, first, I do want to say that Tyler Lyle had his own podcast for a while. It is defunct, but it still exists. And you should go listen to it for sure. And then he has his own solo music that is different from this, very different from this. It's more of your singer-songwriter folk, you know, kind of stuff. Like, if you like Rosie Golan, you're going to feel Tyler Lyle.
Yeah, there
you go. Okay. Then there's another podcast that is called After the Midnight that I found during some research. And basically, if you find yourself getting really into the midnight after this, there's a really cool, very stylized podcast dedicated to the midnight.
Okay, I didn't know that.
And they're going through song by song through the midnight catalog. It's called After the Midnight. These two hosts, Ryan and Zach, they go out of their way to make the video version on YouTube match the vibes that you get from the band.
Cool.
So even their like footage is like filtered and it's got like, you know, purple gradient while they're talking, and
that's
cool visuals that go with it. It's a lot of fun. They go track by track through the catalog. So if you need more deep dives into every midnight song, check out After the Midnight.
That's cool.
It'll be worth your time. Okay. A little bit on Days of Thunder, the 1990 movie, because it is movie month, starring Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman, and Robert Duvall. I forgot that this
and
was...
And Randy Quaid.
And Randy Quaid. I forgot that this was the beginning of Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman.
Yeah.
I don't know. It felt early. I didn't realize that they were actually together as long as they were. But I didn't realize. I got to confess something here. To my recollection, I've never seen Days of Thunder.
That's okay.
I know.
You're forgiven.
It's pretty, it's iconic in its own way, but I've never seen it. Not necessarily my kind of movie. But here's the IMDb description of Days of Thunder. A young hotshot stock car driver.
Pause.
Okay.
I'll just tell you. I'll give you the cliff notes.
Okay.
So you don't have to read it. Because I've seen it.
Okay, let's
so
do it.
I'll give you the, and then you can read that over.
Okay.
So this guy, Cole Trickle, that's Tom Cruise.
Cole Trickle, which, come on.
He's been racing for years.
That
wants to win. His name's Cole Trickle.
That made me want to call Joey Abbott and like, get him to do another round of NASCAR name drivers.
That's right. Been racing for years. Wants to win the Indy 500. Enter Harry Hodge, who's Robert Duvall, to build him this new Chevy Lumina.
Okay.
Okay. Let's pause for a minute there because I want to talk about the Lumina.
Okay. Okay.
Chevy Lumina. It replaced the Chevy Celebrity and the Monte Carlo.
Okay.
Came out in 1990. Sound familiar?
Yeah.
Year of the movie.
Yeah.
And in 90, it became NASCAR's Chevy car.
Okay.
So it didn't have airbags, but it had seat belts that connect to the door passive restraint. You remember those?
Okay, yeah.
Seat belts that just connected to the door.
Yeah.
Remember those? This was the first one of those.
Okay.
So we guest host on a podcast the other day, and I talked about the first cassette I bought was Boys to Men, Coolie High Harmony.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I was talking about how I had to put all the music to the front and just put my head on the dash and listen to it. It's okay because there's no airbags.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I didn't even think about that. Okay. Anyway, Days of Thunder continued. Chevy Lumina.
Okay.
I just want to talk a little bit about that. Cole gets in a wreck at the Daytona 400 in a wreck known as the Big One.
Okay.
in a hospital relationship with Nicole Kidman, whose character is Dr. Claire Lueke. Shocker. Long story short, he wins. Blah, blah, blah. Heroic moment. Foot races Harry at the end in Victory Lane.
There you foot go. Race?
Foot race.
Okay.
So anyway, they get out in foot race. It's, there you go.
That's great. Okay. Well, so it's sort of the
my IMDb might have done it better justice. Those of y'all that love Days of Thunder.
This is IMDb says, a young hotshot stock car driver gets his chance to compete at the top level.
Oh, see, dude, I went in depth.
You went way better. My understanding of it was basically that this was Top Gun on wheels.
It's Tom Cruise. Same right. Concept. I mean, it's kind of great, similar. Great comparison.
I could not believe that really his name was Cole Trickle.
I know. That'd be like if you did a basketball movie and you're like, this is Bob Jabbar.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It's like, because my instinct is to go, that's ridiculous. But then it's really, you kind of go, that's just too on the nose, uh-huh. right? Like, that's too, it's actually too realistic to have a guy named Cole Trickle. For
Cliff Theismann stars as quarterback.
Quarterback, yeah. All right. For the longest time, I would have told you that this movie is where I feel the need for speed came from. But that is indeed Top Gun. Yep. This did, Days of Thunder did provide us, though, with rubbing his racing, uh-huh. right? That's where this comes from, I think from Robert Duvall's character. They filmed part of the movie during the 1990 Daytona 500, adding two cars to the back of the field that were only there to be filmed.
That's
they weren't
cool.
actually in the race. They were just to be filmed.
That's awesome.
And apparently at one point, Dale Earnhardt lapped him completely.
That's cool.
There's a scene where Tom Cruise's character is told he can't pull into the pit because the crew is eating ice cream. And they're like, we're busy eating ice cream. Apparently, that's a thing that really happened to a driver named Benny Parsons at the 1987 Southern 500 race.
I didn't know that.
Which is wild. Let's see. It was nominated for an Oscar for Best Sound. That Oscar went to Dances with Wolves. But, you know, anytime you have, like, cool race car sounds, like,
whatever. It's going to be tough to compete with Howlin' and Wind, though. Oh, ironically enough, I'm wearing a shirt with a wolf on it.
Wolf on it, yeah. Bad Company shirt. I went down kind of a whole rabbit trail on Tom Cruise's teeth.
Okay. Didn't see that one coming.
I watched old Tom Cruise movies and I go, his teeth are different, right? And I don't know why. I just assume that everyone at this point has like veneers uh-huh. or like, you know, like the little like screw-in teeth, whatever they're called. And so I've always sort of assumed that Tom Cruise at some point, I knew when he first came up, he had like kind of jacked up teeth and I didn't know the full story. So I was like, I got to know, this is my time to find out about Tom Cruise's teeth. So like, obviously Tom Cruise has great teeth. Okay. I assumed at some point he had gotten veneers, but apparently that's not true. It's his original teeth minus one. Okay. If you go back and watch The Outsiders, which Tom Cruise is in, his character in The Outsiders has a front tooth that is like partially broken and like just kind of super out of whack. And that is his natural. He has a dead tooth. Uh-huh. When he was a kid, he got hit with a hockey puck.
Okay.
And it knocked it didn't knock out the tooth, but it like partially knocked out the tooth and that tooth died. But that tooth he kept and just put a cap over it in his early acting days. So like Risky Business and stuff like that. Like he doesn't have like the big smile that he has now. His teeth are not, I guess they're treated and whitened and whatever now. Or maybe they just got bigger. I don't know. But he's got a cap there. But in The Outsiders, you look and you go, man, he's got a weird, you know, thing.
For those of y'all that have never seen The Outsiders, don't go in with high hopes. My wife thought she loved that movie, and we bought it, and she's like, we got to watch it.
And
went back and watched it. It's got Ralph Macchio. It's got tons of people.
Yeah, the cast
Everybody
is like,
that's ever been in a movie is in The Outsiders.
Pretty much, yes.
And it's trash. I'm sorry. It didn't age well, I guess. It was like we weren't as impressed. And I was like, you loved this movie? And she's like, I thought I did. It was one of those where
it's a movie with tight jeans and rolled up sleeves, it's not Grease.
That's right.
You know? Yeah. So Tom Cruise has like his teeth, the line between, I don't know why I'm talking so much about this, but the line in the middle of his teeth his teeth are like sort of offset so that that line isn't really in the middle. It gives him the look that he has kind of like a middle tooth.
Okay.
Instead of a gap between his two front teeth.
And that's intentional. They've shifted those.
And that's just natural. That's like the way his is, but he just kind of kept it.
Okay.
But it's like, I think he's missing a molar or whatever. And so his whole top row just kind of shifted over a little bit.
That's weird.
And so if you look at it close, it's like he's kind of got a middle.
Is everybody out there doing stuff with their teeth right now while he's talking? Yeah. It's making me put my teeth together and shift.
Are my teeth fine? How are my teeth?
Right.
Yeah. Anyway,
should I get hit in the face with a hockey puck? Well, this is a good segue in because my Stump the Genius is Tom Cruise related.
Okay.
Not teeth related.
Not teeth.
But it's chronological. So here we go.
All right, let's do it.
Stump the Genius. Stump the Genius. Stump the Genius. It's time to stump the genius.
Jump up and take your part. I take your part.
All right, we're going to play Put These Classic Tom Cruise Movies from the 80s in chronological order.
Ooh, this is going to be hard because I think of it all as one thing.
They're tough as they're all from the 80s, okay. And you're going to know them all. So if you want to write them down or something, help you out. I'm going to give you five, and you got to put them in order.
Okay.
I need to give them in different order so that I don't just read them in order.
Sure.
Top Gun.
Okay.
Born on the 4th of July. Legend. Okay. Risky Business. Rain Man.
Okay. Top Gun, Born on the 4th of July, Legend, Risky.
I don't know the best way to have you give the order. I guess I'll just try and
get,
do you want me to tell you as you go if you're right? Or no, just tell them all I'll give them to you in order.
If we're on Price is Right, I would give you my order and then you would give me a chance to correct it maybe once and then that would be
The years of the movie? Would that help?
No, I think I can do this.
Okay.
I think I can do this. So I'm going to go.
I about said, you want me to give you the year of the movie? Can you put these years in order? Here's a clue.
Okay. All right. The first one I'm going to go with. No, I think the first one's going to be the one that gets me. I'm going to go Risky Business first, then Legend. Then Top Gun, Born on the 4th of July, and Rain Man.
Okay, you missed one.
Okay.
So, which basically means I missed two.
Yeah.
Do you want to move and try to get five for five, or do you just want to hang it up with three? Because if you move one and you move the wrong one.
Yeah, I'm going to switch it.
You're going to take a chance?
I'm going for broke. It's what Tom Cruise's characters would do.
That's right. He would put the pedal to the metal and say, let's go with no gas around and bald tires.
All right. Then I'm going to switch Legend and Risky Business.
You had 1 through 3 right.
Crap.
Risky Business, Legend, Top Gun, Rain Man,
Born on the 4th of July.
But great job. That was good. You're in the ballpark.
Yeah, right.
Risky Business, 83. Which of these is first, 83 or 85? Risky Business in 83, Legend 85, Top Gun 86, Rain Man 88, Born on the 4th of July 89. I've not seen Born on the 4th of July. I couldn't tell you one thing about it. I know it's probably a patriotic movie.
He's a veteran. He's in a wheelchair. That's all I know.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't seen that one. I've seen the other four.
All right. I have a list, because of course I do, of the best auto racing movies of all time.
Oh, that's good.
According to Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
So let's see how this goes. Now, this seems like kind of an...
Is it recency biased? Is Fast and the Furious in there?
Or
is it like NASCAR racing only?
So this is ranked by their tomato meter ranking. Okay.
So that's how good it is by critics, right?
By critics, yes. Okay. All right. So some of these, I feel like it's missing some, but we'll see. I don't know. Because there are some lists that were like best that had different kinds of racing movies.
Okay.
So I don't know what the qualification necessarily is. But all right, here's the first several. Actually, should we go backwards?
Yeah.
Let's go backwards. Yeah, okay.
Save the biggies for the end.
All right. Top 20. I'll go through quickly. Top 21. 21 is Herbie Fully Loaded from 2005.
Okay.
Number 20 is Speed Racer, 2008. Number 19 is Winning, 1969. Paul Newman, Robert Wagner.
Hadn't seen it.
Number 18 is Herbie Goes to Monte Carlo.
Two Herbies in the top 21.
1977, one of the originals. Number 17 is just NASCAR, 2004. It's an IMAX movie.
Nope, hadn't seen it.
I don't know. Starring Kiefer Sutherland.
Okay, I know who he is.
Yeah. Number 16 is Turbo by, it's Disney or DreamWorks.
Okay.
And Ryan Reynolds. Number 15 is Cars 3, big hit in my family, Disney, Pixar. Number 14 is Le Mans, 1971, Steve McQueen.
Okay.
Number 13 is The Last American Hero, 1973. Not the greatest American hero with, was it not Robert Stack? What's the guy's name? Culp, Robert Culp.
Not Last Action Hero.
Not The Last Action Hero. No. This is a racer. Number 12, another Steve McQueen, but it's a movie about the movie Le Mans. Okay. So it's Steve McQueen, The Man and Le Mans, 2015, a documentary.
Okay. I feel like I should watch that movie then. It's got two references.
Number 11, The Love Bug. Another Herbie movie.
Herbie is owning the game.
That's right. And I guess that's the original. And I've always thought it was called Herbie the Love Bug. But it's just the Love Bug.
How about that?
1968.
Let's see was he number, I'm just guessing, 53?
53 is what it looks like.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just trying to visualize in my head.
All right, so now apparently we're in the top 10.
Here we go.
By tomato meter rating.
That's right.
Okay.
Are there going to be any Herbies that beat out the original?
Number 10, Snake and Mongoose, 2013.
No clue.
No idea what that is. Number 9, Rally Road Racers, 2023. Oh, it's animated from the producer of Shrek.
Okay.
Number 8, Winning, The Racing Life of Paul Newman. I did not know that Paul Newman was a big racer. It makes sense. He's voicing cars, and he seems to be pretty revered in there, so I guess that makes sense. But apparently he had a 35-year racing career.
I did not know that.
All right. Number 7, The 24-Hour War, 2016, about, I believe, Le Mans during the 1960s.
I don't think I've seen any of these other than the original Herbie, which I watched when I was young.
Yeah.
And Cars 3.
There's a lot of freaking movies in here about like F1, like Formula One racing and stuff.
Well, this is probably a good place to interject. There's a series out right now on F1 that my friends are all about.
Really?
And they know all the racers. Our friend Scott and Lauren are actually going to Spain to watch an F1 race.
Wow.
Like, that's the big thing there.
Crazy.
One of my friends Kelsey's in love with a guy named Danny Ricciardo. You big racing fans out there?
Okay.
Tell me if he's any good, because I don't know yet.
All right, number 6, Grand Prix, 1966.
Nope.
Number 5, Racing Dreams, 2009. That is a NASCAR movie. Number 4, finally a movie I know, Talladega Nights.
There we go.
The Ballad of Ricky Bobby.
You're not first, you're last.
If you're not first, you're last. Number 3, the number 3 racing movie of all time by Tomato Meter is Cars, the original Cars.
The original one, okay.
2006, 75% on the Tomato Meter. Number 2 is Rush from 2013.
Okay, I've seen that one.
Chris Hemsworth, and that is it is Is that based on a true story? It is, right? It's based on a true story about 70. Okay. And then number 1 is pretty recent, Ford v Ferrari, 2019.
Yeah, that's good.
Which I've heard is great. Yeah. I haven't seen it.
It's good. I've seen that. Wow, Days of Thunder didn't make the list.
Not that list. No, let's see. It's further down. It's
after Herbie,
it's
12.
Number 22. Actually,
I started at 22.
Yeah, I started at 21. Okay, cool. At a 37% on the Rotten Tomatoes. Critics' consensus on Days of Thunder. Days of Thunder has Tom Cruise and plenty of flash going for it, but they aren't enough to compensate for the stock plot, two-dimensional characters, and poorly written dialogue.
Well, there you go.
All right,
everybody, watch it.
But play The Midnight while you watch it.
And everything is better if you play The Midnight while you watch it. And hang around and hear us talk with Tyler, guys. You guys are going to like him. He's good folk.
Yep. So let's go do that now, and then we'll be back to tuck you in on the other side.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, as promised, we are here with Tyler Lyle of The Midnight. Tyler, thanks so much for joining us today on the Great Song Podcast.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
It's going to be a good time. let's start at the beginning. Actually, let's start.
When were you born?
Yeah. What's your earliest memory?
Tell us about your earliest memory. No.
The beginning.
how did you and Tim McEwen get together 10 years ago and kind of get this thing rolling? Tell our listeners the story if they haven't heard it.
Yeah, I was courting a publishing company in Los Angeles, and as publishers do, they tend to hook you up with other writers just to kind of put you on a bunch of first dates and see if anything creatively sparks. So Tim was working with a Danish company called DK, that was their publishing company, and I was trying to get signed to EMI at the time. But, as things do, that company got eaten by another company. You know, this happens in the music industry quite often. But for the time, a nice lady named Katie put us in the room together. And we were coming from such different worlds. Tim was more of like an electronic pop producer, and I was coming from more the folk Americana singer-songwriter kind of narrative country writing world. So initially we didn't quite know what the middle part of the Venn diagram was going to be, but you know, we figured it out. We wrote a song called We Move Forward and decided that we liked working with each other, and so we kept doing it.
That's awesome. You mentioned Danish, so I got to talk about collaborating with Tom Kopp 1983. How did you get hooked up with Jordy? How did that happen?
Oh, man. Well, so when Tim and I first kind of dug into this retro wave thing, Time Cop and Future Cop and all the cops were doing the thing. So it was through Tim. Tim had the connection initially. Now I know Jordy. He's a good bud. And we played a few shows together. And you know, he's a lovely, lovely person. But yeah, River of Darkness was the initial collaboration. And then we did one to return the favor called Static with him. So yeah, Jordy's a great dude.
Yeah, you mentioned Dumb Stuff Live. So that's actually how I discovered you. I went to the Brooklyn Bowl last year and I saw Nightly. So I went to see Nightly. You guys weren't on my radar yet. I never heard of you guys. And I left talking all about you guys. And somehow from the time that I discovered you guys with Nightly, y'all were my number one Spotify Wrapped artist of last year. So I like, and we listen to a lot of music. So I'm a huge fan. Yeah. So if I geek out a little bit, there'll be parts of this where I just geek out on things I like. Just ride the wave with me for just a little bit.
I love it. Feel free.
I know JP has fallen hard for a band when he calls me and says, dude, you've got to listen to this right now. Like, that's when I know. It's only happened maybe 3 times since we've been doing the show that he just calls me and goes, you have to stop what you're doing and listen to this. And so that was definitely what happened with you guys.
Very cool.
What was it? You said, you know, you were trying to find the middle of that diagram, as you put it so well, when you were first writing with Tim. What was it that kind of felt right where you guys went, oh, you know, and then when you continued to write together, I'm interested to know, because of the kind of disparity of those worlds, you know, when you're writing together, how is it coming? What's the process like in the room instrumentally? You know, how are you finding that inspiration to get in the middle of that diagram?
Well, the first time we wrote together, when we wrote We Move Forward, you know, Tim had made a loop, and I was like, great, I love the verse loop. Here's a verse that I think fits. What's the chorus loop? And he's like, no, it's the same loop, because he's coming from like track-based, like dance production world, and I'm coming from folk singer-songwriter world where you have a different chord structure for a verse and a different chord structure for a chorus. And he was like, no, it's the same. That's the loop. I've been building this whole loop the whole time. So that's it. And, it took me a minute to go, there's no way that you can write a melody, a chorus melody over the same chords as the verse chords. And as soon as I realized, nope, it's totally arbitrary. You can totally write a different melody over different chords and it works fine. Yeah. And as soon as I could kind of allow that reach for myself, then it all made sense. And then it became kind of this songwriting exercise where I didn't have to write narrative like I do often when I'm working with country or Americana artists. I was more writing scenery and images. And that became kind of the first sort of lens that I was viewing my work with The Midnight. It was more of writing scenery than it was telling stories.
I got a follow-up since you touched visually. So I want to touch on videos for just a second since you went that way. So the Fire in the Sky, Fire in the Sky video, I was like, yay, a music video, like a real music video with like the red phone. That car is awesome. I'll warn our listeners, if you get car sick, don't watch this, but you're creative. So I imagine heavily involved in the production of this and it's perfect driving. I love that.
That's very yeah, Tim, to his credit, is so the fonts, the colors, the images, he was heavily involved in the video stuff. You know, he and I are such different, like I care about the thematic world, I care about the archetypes and the myth building and how the lyrics fit together. And Tim is more of you know, the real world brass tacks. Okay, how is the t-shirt gonna look?
Okay. So he does the packaging, he does the album cover art, so like all the fluorescent pinks and reds and greens against the black backdrop. That's more Tim.
That's Tim. Yeah, we've gotten a creative director over the last album. So that was, it was more of a collaborative process. But yeah, the, early on, especially, Tim was reaching out to artists that he liked and was in that that aesthetic. So yeah, that's all his credit.
Lost Boy is my favorite of those with the camcorder date, the bottom. What's the significance to the July 31st, 1987? Do you know?
July. we had a few of them. That might be the birth of the internet. Okay. We had a little like there was like a Bruce Springsteen album release in there somewhere.
That's cool.
They're all little Easter eggs. I can't remember what that one is.
Okay. Cool. I didn't know that.
There's a master document that has it on it somewhere. But yeah.
Fantastic. That's great. You've really used the website Bandcamp to your advantage, both for the Midnight and for your solo stuff. Mm-hmm. Smartly tying it to your podcast From the Secret Lair. Tell our listeners and especially our independent musician friends, what's great about Bandcamp and why they should be using it. Hashtag not an ad, hashtag not sponsored.
Yeah. Bandcamp is great because it just allows you to connect immediately. They were kind of first to the game with all the tools that you needed to release a record. You know, I've got the tracks recorded. It's now mixed. It's now mastered. You know, in the early years, Tim would just feel like, okay, I think, can we drop it now? Can we release the record? And so, you know, the record would come out on a Wednesday afternoon at like 4 PM. You know, there was no rhyme or reason to it. It was just a platform that people could discover us. And we got lucky early on. I think it was Reddit. There were a few forums or subreddits that featured our music, and it was just a nice landing page for people to come to. So my experience with it, I did two seasons of The Secret Lair. The first season was 2.5 years. It was every month from January 2016 to May, June of 2018. I would release an episode. I called it The Secret Lair, and it was always some kind of audio essay about a theme, and then I would try and write songs about that theme. So usually it was 4 to 6 songs a month, and it was creatively really helpful. It allowed me to work on my production skills and my songwriting. And that first season, I wrote nearly 200 songs and read about 100 books. Jeez. And that was, it's great. It was like, it saved my creative life. It was happening at a time my wife was working a corporate job in New York, and I had office hours, you know? So it really forced me to kind of hunker down and do the thing that I always said that I was doing. I'm a songwriter. But it actually kind of forced me to punch my time card and really put in the hours and the thought and kind of gave my creative life a boost. So yeah, Bandcamp's great. It has the subscription features. It also, I'm selling t-shirts through the web store this week. So, you know, it's kind of a one-stop shop if you're an independent artist and don't want to shell out some more money for the more expensive option that you could get all of.
I love that you guys are putting out the instrumental versions of these tracks that you can go on and just, you know, get and just soak in and vibe with everything. You know, how do you guys decide to put that out there? And do you find that like people are streaming them? I'm sure you see the numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The synthwave purists, of which there are many vocal ones online. they thought it was sort of not done to put vocals in a synthwave track. You know, we moved a long way from, I guess that was 2014, but, we thought, you know, we have the instrumentals, why not put them out? So, especially the earlier albums, people seem to like it. People who were, doing DJ sets, they could chop things up and just have a little more access to things that they liked and gave them, a lot of people made movies with the instrumentals, like short cut up films, things like that. So yeah, people wanted them and we had them. So we just put them out there, and it's been a good trend, since the beginning.
That's cool. You mentioned 2014. So I got to talk on the Days of Thunder EP. I mean, it's 32 minutes and 17 seconds of perfection from track one of the years all the way through Los Angeles. It's all magic with Gloria. We move forward. I love the whole thing. So how does your music, even stuff from 2014, sound modern and nostalgic at the same time? Like nobody does it better than y'all. Is that kind of your approach? Do you go in with that?
Yeah, I think Tim kind of has a thesis, a feeling that he wants to hit, and I do as well. And our music works best when those things line up. It's that feeling of time passing. It truly is nostalgia. There's this quote from Proust, who says, "There is no truth in life except essentially the truth of going into a room that you haven't been in years." And that's kind of the feeling that I want to get as close as I can to with The Midnight in terms of lyric writing, and for Tim in terms of mood. He's using, gated reverbs. Sorry, I thought I closed that
down.
You're good. The gated reverbs, the DX7s, the rolling bass, things that you would kind of hear just ambiently at 4 years old walking with your mom through a Kmart.
Yeah.
You know, things that you don't know that you know, that are kind of like the cave paintings in your subconscious. And Tim has a few years on me, so I think he internalized some of those sounds and knows how to manipulate them a little better. But yeah, we're trying to get you back to that, to the origins of yourself, which for people in their kind of early to late 30s are those sounds with kind of classic songwriting around it.
Dude, the fact that you went with Kmart instead of Walmart is perfect. So thank you for that. That's awesome. You obviously wax eloquently. You speak extremely well.
Yeah, you're a smart guy.
Talk about the band motto. I'll let you do it. You can do it better than me. So
okay. The Mono no Owari. Yeah. It's the fleeting beauty of time passing, captured in the image of the cherry blossom. You know, you have cherry blossom festivals in Japan, but they also have them in DC. And I was living in Brooklyn at the time. I think we released Days of Thunder just before I moved to Brooklyn. But at the Botanical Garden, they would have the Cherry Blossom Festival, and it's just this ephemeral moment. You know that the thing is going to pass. It's so brief and it's so special because it lasts so short, so quickly, and so it's trying to subtly remind you that you are alive and this moment matters. Everything in our lives, from popular culture to social media, everything kind of tricks us to get invested in a story that doesn't matter, and that isn't ultimately important. And so as a songwriter, what you're trying to do is you are trying to, dangle a pretty shiny thing in front of somebody and subtly go, "This matters. Death is coming. Be free. Live your life. This is the only truth that there is. You know, plant your feet into the ground now." And we're trying to trick you with pretty images and pretty words. So I think that's it. And I think I've always felt that as a songwriter, that was kind of one of the anchors to art that I come back to time and again. It's that you're the same person from when you were 14 to when you're 74, but something changed. There was an arc. You life got put in you in a different way and jumbled up, and you can never separate yourself back to that person who you were. And so there's always a bittersweet in coming to terms with the person that you are now and the people that you've been in your past. And it all matters. And just trying to ground that in the reality of the self. That's, aspirationally. Otherwise I'm just rhyming words, but I mean, that's, that's the goal at the end of the day.
This guy's a thinker. We got a thinker, man, on our hands.
So much smarter than we are.
Okay. So going back to like just pure songwriting, you won an event that like regionally is pretty well known around here called Eddie's Attic Open Mic Shootout in 2010, which is, songwriters in this area know that that's a pretty big deal. Tell our listeners about that Eddie's Attic event and what kind of opportunities it brought about for you back in the day.
Sure. Yeah. So when I started writing songs, I was in college. I was going to Georgia State, which is in Atlanta, only a few miles away from Eddie's Attic, which is in Decatur. It's like a 15-minute drive. But John Mayer, Sean Mullins, the Indigo Girls, Jennifer Nettles, a ton of amazing songwriters came out of Eddie's Attic, the folk scene. Later,
maybe our listeners have heard of them.
Maybe. The Civil Wars were kind of one of the later groups to kind of come out of Eddie's Attic. but because I was writing folk music when I was in college, I would just go hear music there. And I signed up for the open mic one Monday, lost, didn't even get in the top three. And then I thought, I'll get better and I'll try it again. So I waited a couple years and I tried it again, and they invited me to the open mic shootout, which was essentially all the winners for that 6 months. And I was lucky enough to win it. And they gave me $1,000 cash, which I paid my rent with and paid my back rent with. And they gave me some studio time and pressed a record for me. So that was two EPs. One was called Bad Things in Collard Greens, which is kind of a blues EP, and the other was called Inland Islands, which was more of a folk songwriter thing. So that was that. And I finally got a chance to meet John Mayer in New York after one of his Dead and Company shows. And I was like, hey, John, there's a plaque in the back of Eddie's attic and your name's on it, and my name's on the next column over. he couldn't care less, but it was cool to tell him. But yeah, so that was where I started from. The year after that, got my heart broken and moved to Los Angeles. And that was, you know, the rest is history.
There you go. So in Georgia Southern then, you were back to back with the old Turner Field. Did you catch any Braves games at Turner Field in your time at Georgia State?
Yeah, Georgia State, yes.
Did I say Georgia Southern? I meant Georgia State, my bad.
It's all good. I played Georgia Southern too. Those are different friends. Yes, I used to go to Braves games. I was so brokenhearted when they decided to move out to the suburbs that I it took me a long time to go back to a Braves game, because I thought, they've abandoned downtown, the core city. But Georgia State actually bought the stadium after the Braves left and have done an amazing job at, you know, helping rebuild the community there. So, RIP. In-town Braves.
Yeah, we're both big baseball fans. I've been to every Major League Baseball park, and we're both big Braves guys. So we're all about that. So
it's great.
Who would be your dream touring partner? Like act, you know, not an act to tour with, not like if somebody other than Tim. I just mean.
Yeah. Like a band that I would like open for, or
yeah,
like
or they
a band
would open for you. Either way. You guys would co-headline some tour, you know what I mean? The Midnight and.
Yeah. You know, there's this guy, I forget his real name. His artist name is Bibio, and he lives in the middle of England, and he's kind of this hermit. But each record that he puts out is just so lush, and he's such a master at what he does. And he has a new one. I can't remember what it's called. I can look it up, but it kind of has an 80s vibe, and he's never really gone for that before, but it's this smooth, you know, it's beautiful. So I would love to play with Bibio, learn his secrets, steal his wisdom. He's not super well known, but he's an incredibly talented musician. And no matter what your sort of go-to sound is, he's got a record with that on it. So I would highly recommend checking.
Yeah, we'll definitely check it. He's not on my radar. We'll be looking for the Midnight Feet with Bibio. We'll be looking for you guys together.
Great.
I read that you're into tarot card reading. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. It's more of an offshoot of depth psychology than it is, you know, just learning the tarot. I think... So Carl Jung has this idea about archetypes. We are all, you know, we all have a shadow. We all have the persona. There's an anima. There's a self. There's a mother figure. There's, you know, the father figure that's power. And all of these archetypes and more are represented in the tarot. The tarot is, they don't know where it came from. They just found this unbound book of things. It either came from Egypt or it came from Italy. You know, it's an unbound book of 72 cards of mysterious origin, but they line up really well with these archetypes, these sort of fundamental energies in life, I guess you could call them like psychological markers as you grow. You know, there's the fool, you know, he's the jokester, he's the trickster. He's, you know, you see him throughout art and literature. There's the, you know, the hermit or the desperado or Jason or, you know, all of these, all sorts of songs from like Bruce Springsteen to the group Alabama to, you know, Funkadelic. They're all working within archetypes. So I think that the tarot is a great creative prompt. Like I drew the lover's card upside down and I thought, okay, what is like a cursed lover situation? And then I wrote Monsters or the lyrics of Monsters. So, it just works as a good creative prompt to immediately put me in a story. If you draw two cards, you know, the Empress and the Hermit, you know, that's a story. If you want to just give flesh to that idea, what is it like for somebody, you know, to need love, or the Emperor versus the Chariot, you know, somebody who's trying to outrun the law. Like immediately these plots are just sort of inborn in who we are, and you just get to skin them. Every generation or every age has its own kind of flavor. Ours just happens to be this kind of neon synthwave thing, and we get to write Crystalline about the sirens, or Gloria about the anima. So so the tarot is just a nice creative prompt. I don't think it's magic, or I don't use it for divination, but it's a nice tool to have.
The the Back to the Future clips and Gloria is so perfect. I love that so much.
Yeah, totally.
So we have one question we ask everybody. Thank you so much. We'll be respectful of your time. You've been great. So you're on tour, either doing your solo stuff with Midnight, when you're hanging out with Bibio. Anyway, you're on tour and you go into a gas station. What is your gas station snack food of choice? And while you're thinking of it, I'll tell you mine. I get a Three Musketeers bar when I was growing up. My mom would say you could have any candy bar you want. It's the most ounces, so it's bang for your buck. I got like a Three Musketeers bar. What does Tyler get?
I love it. A Three Musketeers bar would sink me, but I do like this. It's like a Reese's snack mix. You got little Reese's pieces with popcorn, a little drizzle of like carrot caramel in there. Anyway, it's a rare sometimes food. It's not an everyday.
Gotcha. We'll be on the lookout for it.
when I need a little pick me up. Yeah, that's what I go for.
Tyler, man, this has been fun. Seriously. Thanks. Keep doing what you're doing. We love it.
Thank you guys so much.
Thanks, man.
Awesome, man.
We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks,
we'll
man.
See you.
Cheers.
Great. Thank you guys so much. Great talking with you. Bye, y'all.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
And that was Tyler Lyle of The Midnight. So cool to have him on with us. Your number one band of 2022, The Midnight. Very cool. It's cool to
talk to the people that you listen to.
Talk to the people that you're listening to right now. These people are top of my list right at this moment. And we've got them here on the Great Song Podcast. That's what we do. We just bring you the absolute best, greatest, and latest, and sometimes oldest. Basically, we bring you whatever we enjoy.
This
has been the plot since day one.
That's right.
We're going to talk about what
we're going to talk about what we like and why you should too.
That's right. That's kind of our thing. All right. So hope you've enjoyed Movie Month so far, and today's episode with Tyler Lyle and The Midnight and Days of Thunder and Tom Cruise's Teeth. All of it. Hope you've had a great time. We'll be back next week with another great song on the Great Song Podcast. Until then, I'm Rob.
And I'm JP.
Go listen to some music. Yeah.